Thanks for continuing on with us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. It's good to be back and doing this live yet again after coming back from the Hari Raya break. We focus a little bit on the World Bank Group and its subsidiary or related company, IFC. This is because IFC, a member of the World Bank Group, the largest global development institution focused on the private sector in emerging markets, has established a presence here in Malaysia. This is to support the country's efforts to foster greater sustainable, resilient and inclusive economic growth. IFC last year outlined strategic priorities in Malaysia focused on enhancing productivity through innovation and digitalization and facilitating an inclusive and resilient recovery. This is also looking at accelerating the country's response to climate and nature-related risks, and has since built a pipeline of potential investments in the country that align with its strategic priorities. Joining us all the way from Hong Kong live is Kim See Lim, the Regional Director for East Asia and the Pacific of IFC, or the International Finance Corporation. Kim, let's look at how IFC intends to support Malaysia through our climate commitments and through investments in clean energy and the circular economy. Kim.
Good morning, and thank you for having me, Ibrahim. It's a pleasure to be here. As you mentioned, the IFC is the largest global development finance institution focused on emerging markets. And globally, we invest in private sector companies, including those in Malaysia, and how we would like to help Malaysia scale up its climate solutions is through lending and investing, as well as advising private companies in Malaysia focused on climate solutions. For instance, renewable energy, electric vehicles, and we also believe that there is a large opportunity to invest in the circular economy in Malaysia. For instance, Malaysia has one of Malaysia has one of the highest waste per capita at 1.2 kilograms per person, compared to the global average of 0.7 kilograms, and that number is 0.2 kilograms in Indonesia. Hence, I think there's a huge opportunity to help the very nascent circular economy in Malaysia thrive.
How do you help countries like Malaysia, for instance, develop our private sector even further? Do you look at investing in specific companies or mobilizing capital from other investors and perhaps launch some advisory services as well?
Yes, absolutely, Ibrahim. That's what we do. Last year, the IFC invested $5 billion US throughout East Asia, of which $2 billion was mobilized from third-party providers, such as commercial banks, sovereign funds, pension funds, insurance companies. They all are our partners in our capital mobilization program. And we can bring these benefits to the Malaysian private sector companies who will be working with us on their journey for to become more sustainable and to become best in class globally.
We're looking at the seriousness of poverty as a global issue that needs to be addressed, looking at particularly in the wake of the multitude of crises where East Asia and the Pacific and Malaysia actually fit the picture. Do you look at the importance of private sector in helping Malaysia achieve its goal as being more important right now to address the requirements of Malaysia as well as to address, say, for instance, global poverty as well?
Yes, absolutely. We would be helping, or we would be interested in helping Malaysia secure its path towards its goals in the 12th Malaysia Plan, which is to become a high-income country. And we would be able to facilitate Malaysia's growth in a more green, inclusive and resilient way. What we mean by that is helping companies increase their long-term sustainability through enhancing the environment and social standards, taking care of the communities, raising governance standards, as well as providing more access to services to the SMEs and along the supply chain.
Maybe you can do a quick run through in terms of the overview of IFC's programs in East Asia and the Pacific, and then perhaps tie this back to what is to be intended to be done here in Malaysia.
So throughout East Asia and the Pacific, as I mentioned before, we invested $5 billion. US dollars last year, and our portfolio throughout the region is about $12 billion. And these are investments of long-term finance, which is a key differentiating factor of the IFC. We provide loans with tenures of 5 to 7 years, depending on the industry, and we can go up to 15 to 20 years for longer-term projects. And this is a source of capital that's not readily available in emerging markets, including in Malaysia. This is one benefit that we can bring to the private companies in Malaysia. We also provide customized advice for the private companies or our clients that invest with us, and we can help them raise the ESG standards to become more sustainable, and in some cases to access European markets, which are now increasingly raising the bar on ESG compliance requirements. In Malaysia in particular, we believe there's a huge opportunity to help the country with renewable sources, such as greening the infrastructure fleet, so electric vehicles, greening the public transportation system. And that is an engagement that we can work with along the supply chain. So infrastructure for charging green vehicles, battery manufacturers, and R&D into improving battery technology, manufacturers of vehicles for the electric fleet, and also, most importantly, the circular economy for recycling the spent batteries coming out of the electric fleet. Another important area that we focus on is on digital infrastructure, because we believe digitalization will create a more inclusive growth, and therefore the backbone of digitalization would be things like green data centers, which we believe is also an area of potential in Malaysia.
You know, you went through some of the investment ideas that is to be done in Malaysia. You've also went through some of the strategic priorities that IFC intends to do here in Malaysia. And perhaps we discussed a little bit in depth in terms of sustainability and how the climate investment actually does fit in IFC's mandate and how that fits in Malaysia's picture. Perhaps you can go through with us the current landscape for sustainable investment in Malaysia and some of the challenges that lie therein that needs to be navigated in order for IFC to achieve its own objectives right now.
Sure. So I think the investment landscape in Malaysia is very positive. There is a very strong enabling environment for the private sector to thrive. However, a large part of the SMEs, which account for about 97% of all businesses in Malaysia, and I believe about 40% of total GDP, have been severely impacted through the pandemic. So one area of focus for us would be to help these SMEs recover from the pandemic. And one of the ways we help SMEs at the IFC is to providing lines of financing to banks targeted at SMEs to increase the access to finance for these small businesses. Another area that we believe could be helpful to the recovery would be to deepen the capital market. The green bond issuances in Malaysia are still quite nascent, and having viable financial instruments for the financing of sustainable investments is important. And this is an area also that IFC specializes in helping countries and clients. And this is an area that we could also work with in Malaysia.
Do you feel that Sukuk can actually help in the green bond initiatives and deepen the capital markets even further?
Yes, absolutely. Malaysia has the potential to develop itself to be an area or the center for Islamic financing, especially for green Sukuks, and further down the road, maybe even blue Sukuks as the market develops.
What about other opportunities that you see or IFC sees in Malaysia that will support government making Malaysia a little bit more prosperous and a little bit more inclusive?
Beyond that, I think there is also an area to develop the blue financing down the road. As I mentioned, there's a lot of potential to develop the circular economy, so it's things like waste management, a recycling program, and linked to that would be blue financing products, so blue bonds, sustainability-linked instruments would be another category of financial instruments that could be explored down the road as the capital markets develop.
Do you feel that there is a possibility of us building nascent market for sustainable and affordable housing finance moving forward?
Yes. Affordable housing is definitely also an area to be explored. And it's also an area that IFC has expertise. We do have affordable housing programs in other emerging markets that have been successful, and it's an area of expertise that we could also bring to Malaysia to help develop that segment of the housing market.
Another area of concern right now, Kim, is looking at addressing micro SMEs and gender financing gaps. These two areas are inwardly very important for Malaysia. I'm not too sure whether IFC is looking extensively into these two areas, i.e. micro SMEs and gender financing gaps. Do you feel that these are the two areas that could also bring focus and encompass some of the investment areas that you mentioned earlier?
Yes, the whole category of SMEs and micro SMEs are definitely an area of focus for us, simply because SMEs and micro SMEs account for nearly all of the businesses across the emerging markets. I think in Malaysia that percentage is like 97% of all businesses are in that category. So definitely an area of focus for us. And also the gender gaps are also part of our inclusion agenda, whereby we would advise companies on how to close gender gaps, how to increase women participation at the corporate level, and including at senior levels of management, and also providing lines of financing for women-owned or women-led businesses. And the way we at IFC help or address small and medium enterprise, micro medium enterprises, including the women-led enterprises, is through working with our partner financial institutions to provide dedicated lines of financing targeted to either women or targeted to these small and medium enterprises. We also then pair that financing with advice to those individual businesses in order to help them scale their business from micro to small and from small to medium and so on. So we do provide a customized and unique package of financing and advice to the private sector.
Why the delay or why now is IFC setting up shop here in Malaysia? What would be some of the precipitating move that requires IFC to enter Malaysia only in 2023?
So IFC has been serving Malaysia and the clients from our region. So we have presence on the ground throughout East Asia. And the World Bank Group has an office in Kuala Lumpur, in Sasana Kijang as well. So we have been working with Malaysian companies like Axiata and NewCare and several others, and helping these companies expand throughout Asia. So, for instance, we are working with Axiata in the expansion to Bangladesh and Sri Lanka. And we have been looking at opportunities to also invest with Malaysian companies to help them grow in Malaysia. And we believe that having a presence on the ground is going to facilitate that process more efficiently than serving Malaysia from, let's say, Singapore or Hong Kong or one of the other hubs that we have. So we're very excited to be establishing a presence in Malaysia, and we're very excited to be growing the program for Malaysia.
There's two more areas that I want to explore with you. The first is on the supporting of the value chain that you mentioned earlier, and the second is on 2023 outlook. On the supporting of the value chain, we're looking at how Malaysian companies can achieve their ambitions by expanding into emerging markets around the world, looking at how they can secure supply lines and so on, and perhaps include how to attain greater financing for growing their businesses. Do you feel that that is an area of concern that IFC is going to be looking at moving forward? And do you feel that that is going to be a challenge for this year?
I'm not sure it's a challenge. I think it is an opportunity to work with the SMEs along the supply chain. We work with some of the large MNCs, for instance, Nike and Apple and others, along their supply chain. So we do have those global networks that we could introduce the SMEs in Malaysia to and plug them into the global supply chain. But at the same time, help them, with advice as well as financing, to reach the standards required by some of these international MNCs to be part of that MNC supply chain. So I think there is a lot of opportunity for us to work with Malaysian SMEs or even some of the larger companies to be plugged in to some of these value chains, which are I think the next step of opportunities for the Malaysian company.
And of course, the second idea is looking at the 2023 outlook. We're looking at inflationary pressures. Previously thought that would be increasing to unsustainable levels or untenable levels. It seems like much of the inflationary cost pressures are being mitigated in a lot of markets, including that of Malaysia. Rate hike cycles are nearing the end of it right now. In fact, Malaysian rate hike cycle in May, many economists are anticipating a no hike that is going to be done by the MPC of Bank Negara. Do you feel that 2023 outlook is having better days ahead, or do you feel that we're looking at further choppy waters right now?
I don't have a crystal ball, but I think the overlapping crisis that we face right now, starting with the pandemic and the effects of food and energy insecurity coming from the war in Ukraine, is going to make the outlook quite uncertain. And I think the way we would, what is important for us is to help our clients and the private sector strengthen its balance sheet, strengthen its capacity to weather any vulnerabilities or volatility on a stronger foot. And hence, our main objective for all of our clients, including those that we aim to work with in Malaysia, is to help them recover in a stronger, greener, more inclusive and resilient manner, so that they will be better prepared for any uncertainties down the road.
If people have not heard of IFC just yet and is only now hearing it for the first time, how do you guys operate? Do you rely on your regional offices? Do you rely on in-country experts? And how do you leverage that in order for you to assist in-country operations to deliver what is needed right now?
We are a global organization, and we are multidisciplinary teams as well. So we, for any project team, we have finance professionals, legal, environment and social, as well as industry specialists who are really experts in that particular field, whether it's manufacturing or whether it's financial services. So we have the capability to draw on this global expertise to provide a customized package of advice and financing solutions for each of the individual clients that we are working with. And the same will be accessible to Malaysian companies. So there is this pool of global experts that we could draw from. And there's also the presence on the ground that we can leverage to work with the clients on a day-to-day basis And also we have regional hubs in Singapore and Hong Kong, where we have a large pool of resources that we can also tap into, depending on the needs of the client or the financing products that we are providing.
When you say multidisciplinary, are there specific sectors that you look at that is more important, for instance, for IFC as the rest of the other sectors?
We operate actually in a very wide spectrum of sectors, ranging from infrastructure to manufacturing, consumer services, agribusiness, what we call TRP, tourism, retail and property, as well as into financial services, which would be banks, insurance companies, leasing companies, and all along the infrastructure sectors as well, from transportation to renewable energy to electric vehicles to digital infrastructure. So it's really a very wide spectrum of sectors that we cover. And we don't necessarily say one is more important than the other, simply because most of our emerging markets that we operate in have needs for any one of these sectors to grow in order to support the sustainable growth of that country.
Do you leverage off some of the relationships that you have with the World Bank in order to deliver some of the objectives? Or is IFC mostly working independently within your own organization?
So within the World Bank Group, there are, I would say, three or four entities that are key. The first one is IBRD, which is the arm that works with the government and lends to the government, advises the government. Then there's the IDA, which is the arm that provides subsidized financing or concessional financing to the poorest countries globally. Then there is NIGA, which provides guarantees or insurance products that mitigate political or convertibility risk. And then there's the IFC, which works with the private sector arm. Combined, these four entities are known as the World Bank Group. So, of course, we work together, and that is one of the benefits of being part of the World Bank Group, because we can leverage the expertise of our colleagues in IBRD for help in terms of regulatory reform or for help in terms of access to government. But IFC as a whole works only with the private sector. IFC does not need to provide financing required. IFC's financing doesn't require sovereign guarantees. So IFC only works with private sector and takes private sector risk.
Fantastic, Kim. Thank you very much for joining us live in Hong Kong. That was Kim C. Lim, the Regional Director for East Asia and the Pacific of the IFC, or the International Finance Corporation. Very quickly, we move on to some of the updates on some of the political news right now in Malaysia. The government is still waiting for Perikatan Nasional to initiate formalities in order to begin negotiations on the financial allocation for opposition members of MPs. This is coming in from the Deputy PM, Datuk Sri Fadila Yusof. He said that the request for a black and white offer from PN was relayed to PN Chief Whip, Datuk Sri Taqiyuddin Hassan, during an unofficial meeting. PN and some government backbenchers have been pressing Prime Minister Datuk Sri Anwar Ibrahim to make good on an election pledge for equal funding for all MPs. Also, Lina Samuel, a cancer patient whose MyCard was seized amid disputes over her nationality, has passed away on the 24th of April. Lina is from the Lun Bawang ethnic group and lived in Lawas, a remote district in northern Sarawak, bordering Brunei and Indonesia. Also, the nearest hospital to Lawas is in Miri, but the journey there requires passing through Brunei, which Lina was unable to do so after her MyCard was seized. While she was granted temporary documents to facilitate travel, Lina's health deteriorated in her final days to the point that she did not have the energy to travel to the hospital for treatment. Also, final updates on some of the political news right now in Malaysia. Parti Pribumi Bersatu Malaysia lawmaker Datuk Muhammad Suhaimi Abdullah was fined RM25,000 by Bursa Malaysia. This was over a late disclosure by his former company, Silver Ridge Holdings, of a contract the company had won in 2021. This contravenes a Bursa ruling which requires immediate disclosure of such developments. As the fine is not a criminal one, Muhammad Suhaimi's status as Langkawi MP is unaffected. These are some of the updates that I can bring to you this morning. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Have a great one, and let's continue on staying with Astro. I want to see some of the updates that we can bring to you today.